Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levin. You're coming up in this hour, Romance, from the show of the same name, later on in the hour. But first, it's the Mercury Summer Theater, with a short story called The Golden Honeymoon, then scenes from Romeo and Juliet, a CBS episode from the 2nd of August, 1946.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles, your producer of a special series of broadcasts presented by the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon, the Mercury Summer Theater of the Air.
Tonight, and every Friday night, Pabst Blue Ribbon presents you with a front row seat in America's favorite summer theater. So, while America's famous producer, writer, director, Orson Welles, entertains you, pour yourself a tall, frosted glass of Pabst Blue Ribbon and enjoy at the same time great entertainment and this truly great beer.
When we bring you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, two love stories. The first, a family portrait. And if you've ever watched the kind of old couple that holds hands during a band concert, if you've ever listened to the affectionate arguments held on the wide verandas of a certain sort of resort hotel where the old folks squeak in their rocking chairs and watch the sun go down over the world, you'll recognize, I think, and welcome this hero and this heroine. The author had the sharpest pair of ears in his century, which is ours. His name is Ring Lardner. This loving record of a holiday in Florida, part one of our broadcast, is called Golden Honeymoon. Mother says that when I start talking, I never know when to stop, but I tell her, what did God give us tongues for if he didn't want us, we should use them?
He didn't give them to us to say the same things over and over.
Well, Mother, when people is like you and I and been married 50 years, you expect everything I say will be something you ain't heard me say before? Well, it may be new to others, as ain't nobody else lived with me as long as you have.
You can bet they ain't, as they couldn't nobody else stand you that long.
Well, you look pretty healthy.
Maybe I do. I looked even healthier before I married you.
You can't get ahead of Mother. We was married 50 years ago last January. Come mighty near getting a divorce in February. My daughter and son-in-law was over from Trenton to help celebrate the golden wedding, and Edie, that's my daughter, says she didn't know why we stayed up here in the cold, why I didn't go to Florida for the winter. Well, make a long story short, we decided to do it. We left on the 12th of January at 3:23 p.m., Mother sat facing the front of the train as it makes her giddy to ride backwards. I sat facing her, which does not affect me. We reached Philadelphia at 4:03 p.m., Baltimore at 6:30, and Washington, D.C. at 7:25. We laid over there a couple hours. I went for a stroll, come back, found Mother scared stiff. She thought I'd got left behind. Well, I says, I would have followed you on the next train.
Yes, you would. With me having all the money?
Well, we're in Washington, and I could have borrowed from the U.S. Treasury. After another day and night, we got into St. Petersburg, Florida at 8:20 a.m. You'd think there was a riot.
Taxi! First right to the best hotel.
Step right in every room with the bath.
None better than the Front City Hotel.
None better.
There you are. Just like a king.
Room with a view.
Step right in. None better.
Well, it's a good thing we've got a place picked out to go to.
Why?
Well, it'd be hard to choose amongst them if every one of them is the best.
First,
the
best hotel.
Number 10, the
First
Lady Hotel.
We went to the address that my son-in-law gave us and introduced ourselves to the lady that owned the house. She was a young widow of about 48 years of age.
This would be your room. It's nice and airy. And you have your own washstand.
How much is the bad news?
$12 a week.
I guess I will survive the shock.
Don't pay no attention to Pa. He's always getting spry around a pretty woman. Makes him feel like a young man of 60 again.
You can't get ahead of Mother. Well, $12 a week ain't much, and we was only 3 blocks away from Williams Park. That's some place, that park. There's a big bandstand and chairs for folks to sit and listen to the concerts. And all around there's places for games, chess, checkers, badminton, horseshoes, whole shebang. Mother and me bought a membership in the club. Cost $1 for the season. Mother listens to the band, as she is a sucker for music. And me, I play checkers. About eating. We found Nouse Cafeteria and ate most of our meals there. Averaged about $2 a day for the two of us, but the food was good and everything was nice and clean. A man don't mind paying the price if things is clean and well cooked. On the 3rd of February, we spread ourselves and eat supper at the Poinsettia Hotel. It was Mother's birthday. We had sirloin steak.
It don't look very big, Pa.
Cost 75 cents.
Looks hardly big enough for one.
Well, I guess a good thing every day ain't your birthday, or we'd be in the poorhouse.
No, because if every day was my birthday, I'd be old enough by this time to have been in my grave long ago.
You can't get ahead of Mother. Yeah, things went along quiet like this till one day at the park, I was playing checkers, and Mother was listening to the band concert. And the woman next to her opened up a conversation.
Nice music, isn't it?
Yes, I enjoy it.
Where are you from?
Jersey City.
And you?
I'm Mrs. Frank M. Hutz of Hillsdale, Michigan. Of course, I'm originally from Alabama.
Well, you could have knocked Mother over with a pigeon feather. Frank M. Hartzell was the man who was engaged to Mother till I stepped in and cut him out 52 years ago. Well, four of us had dinner, and then we went up to our house, sat in the parlor. Mother was very apologetic.
Miss Hartzell, I'm scared you find it tiresome listening to we three talking over old times.
Oh, no, not at all. I've heard Frank talk quite a bit about his old friends, and so it seems as though I know most of them, although not quite so well as I know my own friends, of course.
Well, as it turned out, Mother didn't have no need to apologize. I have heard a lot of women that could go it, but Hartzell's wife takes the cake of all the women I have ever seen. She told us the family history of everybody in the state of Alabama and Michigan, and she would have been going yet if the clock hadn't broke.
The clock sounds like it's busted.
Either that or it's horrible late.
Well, we'll run along. We'll see you again, won't we?
How about some cards tomorrow night? You play whist?
Oh, yes. Come to our place.
That's what we did. We played cards with him, with Mother and Hartzell partners against his wife and I. Me and my partner certainly got the worst of it. All in all, we played about 10 times. There was only one night when Mrs. Hartzell and me come out ahead. That night was no fault of hers. Hartzell got to feeling pretty good about himself. But I took it out of him one morning in the park. He foolishly offered to play me checkers. Didn't have a chance. A crowd of folks who usually watched me play began to pass off remarks.
Whoever told you you was a checker player?
You might maybe be good for tiddlywinks, but not checkers.
Almost felt like letting him beat me a couple of games. But the crowd would have noted it was a put-up job. Of course, the women folks joined us after the massacre, and I wasn't going to mention it, but...
Well, Charlie and I had a little game of checkers, but I'm no match for him. Not me.
Well, checkers ain't much of a game anyway. It's more of a children's game, ain't it?
Yes, ma'am. It's a children's game the way your husband plays it.
Maybe there's other games where Frank can beat you.
Yes, I bet he could beat you pitching horseshoes.
Well, I'd give him a chance to, and I ain't pitched a shoe in over 16 years.
Well, I ain't played checkers in 20 years.
You ain't never played it.
Now, Pa, just for that, you pitch horseshoes with Frank.
And you know, Hartzell was the luckiest pitcher I ever seen. He had some pitches where the shoe lit 5 and 6 feet short, and then schoonered up and was a ringer. There were some hard points in my horseshoes. Just when I was getting my distance, my thumb got to bleeding, so I had to quit. Hartzell said the score was 19-6, but I don't know what it was. They wanted us to play cards again that night, but I was sick and tired of them, and I tried to get out of it.
What's the matter, Charlie? Afraid you'll get beat again?
I ought to tell him why we got beat.
I couldn't never lose a game of cards if I always had Lucy for a partner.
Well, you had a chance 50 years ago to always have her for a partner. And you wasn't man enough to keep her.
Well, you must have had something stronger than tea to make you talk that silly.
She was just trying to smooth things over. I was sorry the minute I said it. Hartzell, he didn't know what to say. And for once, his wife couldn't say nothing. We didn't see him again. As soon as we got to our room, Mother began to scold me.
You'd ought to be ashamed of yourself, talking that way to Frank.
I guess he's such a wonderful pitcher and card player that you wish you'd married him.
Well, at least he ain't a baby to give up pitching because his thumb has a few scratches.
Well, if he's so great, why didn't you marry him?
I almost wish I had.
I wish so, too.
I'll remember that.
That's the last word she said to me. For 2 days. Then we was in the park sitting on a bench. We made up while the band started up a nice wall.
Listen, Charlie. This is our golden honeymoon. We don't want the whole thing spoiled with a silly old quarrel.
Well, do you mean that about wishing you'd married Hartzell?
Of course not. That is, if you didn't mean that you wished I had, too.
Well, I was just tired and wrought up. I thank God you chose me instead of him, as there's no other woman in the world who I could have lived with all these years.
Yes. You have needed a woman with a great deal of intelligence and understanding and patience.
Like I said, you can't get ahead of Mother. That was Golden Honeymoon, a love story by Ring Lardner, part the first of the Mercury Summer Theater's offering for this Friday. Part two is another love story. Well, if there's such a thing as a happy ending to a love story, Golden Honeymoon was it. We can't promise you as much for part two of this broadcast. Boy gets girl in every melodrama, and in the melodramas, boy and girl live happily ever after. But when love itself is the central theme, happy endings are rare indeed. And of all love stories, the most famous makes no break with this tradition. We bring you now with all possible pathos a few of its final and best-regarded scenes. We pick up this pair of star-crossed lovers. At the last moment, they are destined to enjoy together. He's been ordered into exile for the killing of her kinsman in a street brawl. And for a parting moment before banishment, he is stolen by night into a bedchamber. But now it is already dawn.
I'll be gone. It is not yet near day. It was the nightingale and not the lark that pierced the fearful hollow of thine ear. Believe me, love, it was the nightingale.
It was the lark, the herald of the morn, no nightingale. Look, love, what envious streaks do lace the severing clouds in yonder east. Night's candles are burnt out. And jocund day stands tiptoe on the misty mountaintops. I must be gone and live, or stay and die.
Oh, God, I have an ill-divining soul. Methinks I see thee as one dead in the bottom of a tomb. Either my eyesight pales or thou look'st pale.
And trust me, love, in my eye, so do you. Dry sorrow drinks our blood. Adieu. Adieu.
recognize the words, but to ensure your memory of the plot, the lover now goes off to exile, and his lady, forced by her family into marriage with the young Count Paris, drinks a sleeping potion, that she may be taken for dead and laid away in a burial vault, where her true love may come and rescue her. He comes, as she had planned, but never learns that she is only sleeping. Having purchased poison, he takes it and breathes his last by her tomb. For never was a story of more woe than this of Juliet and her Romeo. Trust the flattering truth of sleep. My dreams presage some joyful news at hand. My bosom's lord sits lightly in his throne, and all this day an unaccustomed spirit lifts me above the ground with cheerful thoughts. I dreamt my lady came and found me dead. Strange dream that gives a dead man leave to think and breathe such life with kisses in my lips, that I revived and was an emperor. Oh me, how sweet is love itself possessed, when but love's shadows are so rich in joy.
News from Verona. How now, Balthazar? How doth my lady? Is my father well? How fares my Juliet? That I ask again, for nothing can be ill if she be well.
Then she is well, and nothing can be ill. Her body sleeps in Capo's monument.
Is it e'en so? Then I defy you, stars. Thou knowest my lodging. Get me ink and paper, and hire post horses. I will hence tonight. Get thee gone. And hire those horses. I'll be with thee straight. Well, Juliet, I will lie with thee tonight. Let's see for means. I do remember an apothecary, and hereabouts a dwells. Meager were his looks. Sharp misery had worn him to the bones. Noting his penury to myself, I said, and if a man did need a poison now, here lives a caitiff wretch would sell it him, as I remember this should be the house. What ho! Apothecary!
Who calls?
Come hither, man. I see that thou art poor. Hold. There is 40 ducats. Let me have a dram of poison.
Put this in any liquid thing you will and drink it off. And if you had the strength of 20 men, it would dispatch you straight.
Come, cordial, and not poison. Go with me to Juliet's tomb. For there must I use thee.
Count Paris, who was to have married Juliet, comes by night into the churchyard, bearing flowers for Juliet, but hearing the approach of Romeo and his servant, he hides himself to watch.
What cursed foot wanders this way tonight to cross my obsequies in my true love's right? What with a torch? Muffle me night a while.
Give me that mattock and the wrenching iron.
Yes, sir.
Whate'er thou hearest or seest, stand all aloof, and do not interrupt me in my course. But if thou jealous dost return to pry in what thy father shall intend to do, by heaven I will tear thee joint by joint and strew this hungry churchyard with thy limbs.
I will be gone, sir, and not trouble.
Thou detestable maw, thou womb of death, gorged with the dearest morsel of the earth. Thus I enforce thy rotten jaws to open, and in despite, I'll cram thee with more food.
Stop thy unhallowed toil, vile Montague. Obey and go with me, for thou must die.
I must indeed, and therefore came I hither. Good gentle youth,
Tempt not a desperate man. Put not another sin upon my head by urging me to fury. Oh, be gone! By heaven, I love thee better than myself, for I came hither armed against myself. Stay not, be gone! Live, and hereafter say a madman's mercy bid thee run away.
I do defy thy conjurations and apprehend thee for a felon here.
Wilt thou provoke me, then have at thee, boy.
Oh, I am slain. If thou be merciful, open the tomb. Lay me with Juliet.
In faith, I will. Let me peruse this face. Mercutio's kinsman, noble County Paris. What said my man when my betrothed soul did not attend him as we rode? I think he told me Paris should have married Juliet. Said he not so? Or did I dream it so? Or am I mad, hearing him talk of Juliet, to think it was so? Oh, give me thy hand. One writ with me in sour misfortune's book. I'll bury thee in a triumphant grave. A grave? Oh, no. A lantern slaughtered youth. For here lies Juliet, and her beauty makes this vault a feasting presence. Full of light. Death, lie thou there, by a dead man interred. Oh, my love. My wife. Death, that hath sucked the honey of thy breath, hath had no power yet upon thy beauty. Thou art not conquered. Beauty's ensign yet is crimson in thy lips and in thy cheeks, and death's pale flag is not advanced there. Oh, dear Juliet, why art thou yet so fair? Shall I believe that unsubstantial death is amorous? And that the lean, abhorred monster keeps thee here in dark to be his paramour? For fear of that, I still will stay with thee, and never from this palace of dim night depart again. Here will I remain, with worms that are thy chambermaids, O, here will I set up my everlasting rest and shake the yoke of inauspicious stars from this world-weary flesh. Eyes, look your last. Arms, take your last embrace. And lips, oh, you the doors of breath, seal with a righteous kiss a dateless bargain to engrossing death. Come, bitter conduct, come, unsavory guide, thou desperate pilot, now at once. Run on the dashing rocks thy seasick, weary bark. Here's to my love. Oh, true apothecary, thy drugs. Ah, quick. With a kiss, I die.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just performed for you three scenes from William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. I'd like to tell you about next Friday's broadcast. But first, a word from Jim Amici.
First, let me again remind you to be patient with your dealer when, occasionally these days, he's unable to supply you with all the Pabst Blue Ribbon you'd like. He's doing his best, you can be sure of that. Yes, and here's something else you can be sure of. Every single bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon you do get will, as always, be the happy blending of never less than 33 fine brews. Yes, every foaming, frosty glass you enjoy will, as always, have that famous Pabst Blue Ribbon flavor. Not too heavy, not too light, but fresh, clean, sparkling, with the real beer taste coming through the way you like it. So keep asking for blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon.
We'd like you to join us next week, ladies and gentlemen, for several more of these broadcasts on this special series. We hope you enjoy them. If you are enjoying them, we'd appreciate it much if you'd write us about it and tell us what kind of story you'd like us to do for you. We have enough time left to represent most of your choices, at least with the sort of thing you like to hear us do. So please just write us a postcard or something. You don't have to suggest a title, just a tone. Thanks again for listening. Please join us next week. Until then, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Mercury Summer Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from August 2nd, 1946. In that same year, Orson Welles was appearing in three motion pictures, two of them romances, one where he played a dual role alongside Claudette Colbert in Tomorrow is Forever, and as the narrator for the Western romance Duel in the Sun, with Jennifer Jones, Joseph Cotten, and Gregory Peck. This is an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for the show Romance with the story Heatherstone Revisited, heard on CBS on May 28, 1955.
Now from Hollywood, Romance. Perhaps you remember Heatherstone, the great country house that never existed. Perhaps you remember, too, the highly fictitious Charles and Fanny who live at Heatherstone, and Bunny, the equally fictional perennial houseguest. If you do remember them, you may enjoy meeting them again. If you never met them before, we hope you'll join us now in this new play. Now with John Daner as Bunny, we bring you transcribed Kathleen Height's delightful story, Heatherstone Revisited.
It was Charles who suggested it. I distinctly recall his words last time when I trod the Fair Oaks Road from the station to Heatherstone. He said to me, Bunny, try Mill Pond next time. A bit longer, but the scenery is first rate. I told him I'd remember, and indeed I did. I suppose that was my big mistake, remembering Charles' words to the letter that way. A bit longer, indeed. The Mill Pond Road is at least twice as long as Fair Oaks. Man has to keep his wits about him to find Heatherstone at all. Where the devil is Heatherstone? I can't seem to find it through all this brush. Oh, I say, Charles!
Lost off target completely. Can't expect to qualify for the Royal Talks with shots like that.
Charles, are you still armed?
Do wish I'd stop hearing voices.
The bow and arrow, Charles. Will you please put them aside?
Not the Joan of Arc sort, really. Hearing voices, that sort of thing. Next thing you know, I'll be seeing things.
Perhaps I should have written in advance of my visit, Charles, but you see, it all came up rather suddenly, and I knew that you...
Stand back!
I say,
I do wish you'd put up your weapons, Charles.
If it's a vision, it'll vanish in time, bad enough to hear voices, but seeing wild apparitions defies a man's strength, moral fiber.
Charles, it's Bunny.
Cosby.
But it is. See? There's no cause for alarm. I'm no wild apparition, as you put it.
Highly debatable point.
I'm delighted to see you again, Charles.
Oh, dare say. Don't suppose you ran across a wild pig in the thicket hereabouts?
You can't say I did.
Odd. Missed him with my arrow, you know. Might have grazed him a bit about the head, nothing more. Made straight for the thicket.
I'm afraid I missed him.
Mammoth creature, you know. Big. Tall as you are, Bunny.
Not as straight, I dare say. Always stand erect, you know. Gives a man a bearing, don't you think?
I don't understand it. Wild pigs don't just go off and sit there, you know. Standing on his hind legs, tall as you are. Made straight for the thicket.
As long as you've brought up the thicket, Charles, I don't think you should go about letting fly with your arrow willy-nilly.
That's so?
Quite. I'd not taken two steps into the clearing until this winged thing flew past my head.
That close,
well, it might have grazed me a bit about the head. I made straight for the thicket.
Bit thick in the thicket, eh?
Ever so.
Suppose you were standing on your hind legs?
Oh, yes. It's my practice.
Think we've hit on it, old boy.
Glad to see you in such good humor, Charles.
Mistook you for a wild pig, you know.
Yeah, I'll forgive you now that you admit your mistake.
Not a bit of it. Not rarely mistaken, you know. You and a wild pig. Both a couple of bloody boars.
Such are the friendships a man cherishes. Charles and his dear wife, Fanny. I knew so well that she'd be as enchanted to see me again as Charles was. Oh, every bit. And though they never put it into words exactly, I knew by their every look and deed that they meant me to consider Heatherstone as my home.
Wretched shock, seeing you again so soon, Bunny.
Thank you, dear Fanny.
I'm simply sick you're here.
All thanks to your generous hospitality, Fanny.
Afraid you can put the full blame on me this time, old girl. Wasn't on target, so to speak, when I pulled the bowstring.
You missed him.
Worst sort of a shot.
Oh, Charles.
Not a bit of it, Fanny. Frightfully close. Might have grazed me a bit about the head. I made straight for the thicket.
Not sporting of you, Bunny. Charles isn't used to moving targets.
Point there. Thanks, old girl.
Not at all.
Well, he claims he took me for a wild pig.
Ordinary sort of mistake.
Not rarely mistaken, you know. Bunny and a wild pig. Both a couple of bloody boars.
Oh, there, there, Charles. Don't go on about it.
That's a first-rate sort of joke. All mine, too. I made it up myself. Hey, Bunny?
I'm proud to say you did, Charles. Proud to say I heard it the first time round.
How is it you're here, Bunny?
Well, no thanks to Charles, I'll tell you. Came the Mill Pond Road at his suggestion.
A bit longer, but the scenery is first rate.
I have the distinct memory, as if it were only last night's nightmare, that you were with us not 2 months ago, Bunny.
I, too, have counted the days until we'd meet again, dear Fanny.
But you only come to us once a year. And then, not by invitation, you may be sure.
The warmth of your welcome is all the invitation I need.
Apparently. But twice in 2 months' time. I say, I call that a bit thick.
How'd you manage on the Mill Pond Road, Bunny?
Awfully. It's twice as long as Fair Oaks.
All of that?
A man has to keep his wits about him to find Heatherstone at all.
Precisely.
It's nothing more than a footpath, you know, dare say, with the thicket and all. I was on my all fours a good half the journey.
On your hind legs, you're the picture of a wild boar.
So he is. So he is, Charles. Only there's nothing really wild about Bunny, is there?
I say.
Easy on, old girl. That's my joke.
I suppose it is. I say, Bunny, how is it you're not with the Carstairs?
Good question. They went there, you know, from here the last time. Found they'd gone off somewhere.
Did you try the Bliss Wickliffe?
Indeed. Made straight for them from the Carstairs. Found they'd gone off somewhere.
Surely you checked the Darrington.
Made straight for them from the Bliss Wickliffe's.
And?
Found they'd gone off somewhere.
I'm beginning to sense a trend.
I thought precisely. But I shan't say I was daunted by this, shall we say, general exodus. Rather, head high, I made straight for the Lindsay's.
Yes?
Found they'd gone off somewhere.
Charles?
Well, out with it, old girl.
Let's go off somewhere.
A bit late for that, dare say you tag along, eh, Bunny?
Oh, how very thoughtful of you to invite me, dear Charles.
Oh, afraid we're trapped, old girl.
Pity. I see.
Of course, Charles. I do need working on moving targets. If he stays about, I could get some first-rate practice.
I do think this might be a solution, Charles.
Mind putting an apple on your head, Bunny?
Don't see any fruit about.
I've thought it over carefully, and I must say it's a capital idea, Charles.
Well, there's fruit about if you're willing, Bunny.
If it's properly clean and all, I'd have no objection to putting an apple on my head, but what on earth for?
Boyhood urge, you might say. Stayed with me through the years, you know. Dare say you're familiar with the story of William Tell.
Whoa, what blue-blooded boy isn't? I say, Charles, you mean to shoot the apple from my head?
I mean to try.
And in case it doesn't work, let me know, Charles. I've a capital idea myself.
I can't deny they'd piqued my interest with their little schemes. Dear Charles and Fanny, always the perfect hosts. But now, in this moment, I sense that Charles and Fanny wanted to discuss their capital ideas for my entertainment. So I excused myself and walked about the grounds, even as far as the cottage where Celia and Bertie live now. By an odd coincidence, found they'd gone off somewhere.
How was that, old girl?
Depends. Are you still aiming at the apple on the inverted fruit bowl?
Certainly. Fruit bowl's remarkably like Bunny's head.
Bad shot, then. Broke the bisque figurine on the opposite wall.
Guess the old eye's going, then. May as well turn in the old bow and arrow.
Oh, don't despair, Charles. Have another go at it.
Kind of you, Fanny, encouraging me this way.
Thank you. And do have another bad shot, will you?
How's that?
The companion piece to the bisque figurine on the opposite wall. It's no good to me alone.
I suppose not. Do you think I should aim at it?
Naturally not. The apple on the inverted fruit bowl.
Very well. Ready, old girl?
Positively thumping with anticipation.
Here we go.
By Jove, Charles, bullseye. You split the apple.
So I see. Well, may as well turn in the old bow and arrow.
How's that?
I went against you. Aimed at the companion piece to the bisque figurine on the opposite wall.
Oh, Charles. How really very disappointing.
You won't let the news get about, will you, old girl?
And bear your shame. No, thank you.
Good girl.
There, Charles. This is no time for sentiment.
Oh, sorry, lost my head.
Now then, we'll have to abandon any scheme for doing Bunny in with the bow and arrow. Agreed?
Agreed, alas.
I have a capital idea myself. Seems obvious Bunny's run his course with the rest of the crowd.
The Darringtons, the Blisswickliffs, the Carstairs, the Lindleys, and, well, they've all run for cover.
It appears we're all he has left. Charles, I don't mean to live out my years with you and Bunny.
Can't say I blame you. You've got a scheme, Fanny?
Elspeth.
Elspeth? You don't mean the Dowager Marchioness of Quint?
I do. I mean for Elspeth and Bunny to meet and marry. She's really quite wealthy, you know, and often collects odd bits of things.
Fiendy sort of woman. Can't stand her, you know. Perfect for Buddy.
Precisely.
Very well, then. I shan't really abandon my bow and arrow. Ho, ho, ho. Might have to play Cupid myself.
Perhaps a less sensitive soul than I would have let it all slip by unnoticed. But the next few days were filled with mystery and intrigue to this trained eye. Clearly, Fanny and Charles were planning a gala affair in my honor. And I had no real right to count on it, of course. But I shouldn't have been surprised if the royal coach found its way there from Buckingham. Oh, there. Dear friends, Charles and Fanny, with gentle, delicate instincts.
Oh, this way, Bunny. Come along.
I say, Charles, you're not still armed with that frightful bow and arrow.
The arrow shan't leave the quiver, on my word, unless it becomes necessary to flush the game from the bush.
I've thought it over about the apple on my head. In fact, I've taken care to recall the entire William Tell incident. I can't say the idea appeals to me.
May not be necessary. I shouldn't panic if I were you.
It gives a chap an uneasy feeling, you know.
Forgive me, Charles, but the thought has crossed my mind that I'm beginning to pall on you and Fanny.
Yes, you are.
Good of you to reassure me. Where are we going, Charles?
To the slaughter, so to speak. Well, in you go, Bernard.
Sir, that's not good form. Buffeting a chap about this way plays havoc with a chap's sense of security. I say, Charles, we are not alone.
Isn't he great, Fanny? Wherever did you find him?
Extraordinary things happen when you don't go looking for them, Elspeth. Actually, he found us.
Something of a shock, you know. Not at all what I had in mind.
Dare say his mother felt much the same way. Charles, dear, make proper introductions all round.
Oh, very well. Elspeth, meet Bunny. Bunny, the Dowager Marchioness of Quince. Old fruit, you might.
All right. Get on with it, Charles.
I thought we might have a good laugh at a time. Very well, very well. Elspeth's quite wealthy, Bunny. Fiendish sort of woman. Can't abide her myself, personally. Perfect for you, old man. Fanny and I mean for you to marry.
That's so.
Superbly subtle, Charles.
Immense.
Thank you.
Come here, dear boy. Sit by me.
You say she's quite wealthy, Charles?
In court circles, she's known as the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
It's this, or that ugly business about an apple on my head.
Precisely.
Ruddy, poor alternatives, what?
Come along, Charles. We've set off the fuses, so to speak. I can't say I savor the idea of being around for the explosion.
Nor I. Horrible sight. Old fruit like Elspeth going coquettish.
I say, Charles, Fanny.
I warn you, Bunny. My quiver is quivering.
Oh, so it is.
Good hunting, old chap.
Quite. Quite.
We shan't bolt the door, unless you insist.
Bolt it, Fanny.
I say.
Agreed, then. Come here, you.
I think not.
I say, you're a shy one. But you needn't be with me, you know. At my age, there's no time to be shy.
Oh, here, old girl. Release me.
I think not.
Very well. But at this close range, I shall feel obliged to call you Elspeth.
My dear boy, you don't have to call me anything. I'm right here, you know.
Oh, yes, so you are.
How is it we've not met before, Bunny?
I'm a bit of a will-o'-the-wisp, you know. Move about. All the best circles.
Awfully dull, aren't they? Best circles.
I shouldn't say that. I've known any number of lively times with them.
Glad you agree with me. Seems we've an uncommon lot in common, what?
I think not.
Exactly. We'll marry, you know.
I do so hope not, Elspeth.
I've not been married in some time. It's most awfully diverting marriage, don't you think?
Can't say, really. I never had a go at it.
Bunny, dear, I'm flattered. You've never been married, yet you insist on marrying me.
Not a bit of it. Don't insist at all. As a matter of fact, I find the idea entirely most appalling.
Utterly. I'll arrange things with the vicar tomorrow.
I shouldn't bother about it if I were you.
We'll marry on Sunday, immediate following the rugby match.
I say, rugby.
Do you play?
No. Indeed. Frightfully rough go, rugby. Big chaps, you know. Dare say it's too most awfully physical for me.
You'd not last through the first scrum.
But I do so love to be on hand. Bolster the team along a bit, you know. Come along. Come along, varsity.
Good spirit, Bunny, means everything to the team.
You speak as if you know that firsthand, old girl.
My dear boy, you are looking at the left side, 5/8 back of the Worcestershire County Worcester.
By Jove! Well, I must say, you've got the build for it. 5/8 back, you say?
We Worcesters play New Zealand rules.
Oh, bully! I say, I should love to watch you play.
Sunday, then. And we'll marry after. Immediate following the match.
Remarkable insight, Elspeth. Searched out my weakness right off and
pounced upon it. I do so love a good rugby match. As a spectator, understand. Preferably from the vantage point under a stout umbrella. Not one much for the sun, you know. Never have held much with a little quote about mad dogs and Englishmen. So it was that Sunday afternoon I found myself at the rugby match. So it was indeed. I was dragged there bodily by a determined Fanny and the constant threat from Charles about his bloody bow and arrow.
Come along, varsity!
Stay with the home squad, Fanny. I mean to have some straight talk with Bunny.
Do let's find a cool spot then, Charles.
Straight away, old chap. Yes. There's a spate of shade just to the lee of the grandstand.
Very well.
That's the way, varsity! Good try!
Old girl loves the rough go, doesn't she?
Seems to. About the shade, Charles, I'm beginning to grow faint.
Well, come along with you. Perfectly normal reaction, you know. Growing faint, seeking shade. All part of a bridegroom's lot.
Dare say.
I mean to have some straight talk with you, Bunny.
I'd much rather have a cool drink. Or some ices, perhaps. I say, old man, I may not last, you know.
Trouble is, you will. Now then, I've been married an interminable length of time, you know. But not you, Bunny. You're a rank novice at this sort of thing.
Rank.
Quite. Never had a son, you know. Don't quite know how to go about this straight talk, as it were.
No matter. I'd prefer not listening to you, Charles. You've a way of going on and on. And I do feel faint, you know.
I suppose the easiest examples are the birds and the bees. I've heard that was a good way to go about this straight talk, as it were.
What about birds and the bees, Charles?
Oh, by Jove, excellent question. Can't answer it.
Good. Glad I asked.
Must be some sort of answer. Never heard one, did you, about the birds and the bees?
Never cared much one way or the other about them.
Well, good to have it all out in the open. Knew you'd want to talk it over with someone.
Naturally.
Happy to oblige. Who makes a man feel good inside straight talk like that, what?
First rate.
Any questions?
No. There you go. Unless you could direct me to a cool drink. Or some ices, perhaps.
I haven't seen any about. Well, be going along then. I'll send Elspeth over here to you directly after the match.
Don't bother.
Glad to.
I've got a kiss for the old girl, Bunny. Played a jolly good game.
No, you think not?
It's immediate after the match. Bunny will marry now.
Release me, Elspeth.
I think not.
Very well. I say, you don't happen to have a cool drink? Or some ices, perhaps, on your person?
Sorry. Must say, you look dreadful, Bunny.
You're an outrageous sight yourself, old girl.
Isn't it marvelous, Bunny? We're so in tune. So deucedly well matched.
Don't agree at all. I think the entire idea is utterly preposterous, not to say appalling.
We'll marry as soon as I've had my shower.
Elizabeth, I insist that you release me.
Have to. Going to shower.
Thank you. But I speak of a further release.
How's that?
Understand, old girl. You're not without a certain amount of charm, and there's no wealth I'd rather share than that of the Duchy of Queen's.
Oh, reminds me, Bunny. The vicar will have a bit of paper for you to sign. Releases you from any claim at all on my money.
Well, you've a good head on your shoulders, Elspeth. I don't think you've got it on straight, but a good head, nevertheless.
Flattery, flattery. Dear Bunny, when will it cease?
Now.
Immediate.
Precisely.
You don't mean to marry me?
Never did.
Oh. Well, then I shall shower anyway.
Good girl. Not angry.
Not a bit of it. Shake hands.
Ever so gently now, old girl. There now, leave the fingers intact.
What will you do now, Bunny, not marrying me and all that?
I will fulfill my destiny, Elspeth. Live out my years in peace and gentility with my dear friends, Charles and Fanny.
Oh, blast!
I say, Charles, old man, you must go in for more practice. You missed me again.
Romance is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald with editorial supervision by Het Mannheim. You've heard Heatherstone Revisited, specially written for Romance by Kathleen Height, starring John Daner as Bunny. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Vivi Janis, and Lois Corbett. This is George Walsh inviting you to hear Romance transcribed next week at this same time. It's exclusive. It's later today. It's CBS Radio's coverage of the Preakness, the second big race in this season's Triple Crown series in the Sport of Kings. The same great on-the-spot team that brought you the exclusive coverage of this year's Kentucky Derby will be at it again on most of these same stations. Don't miss the color, the excitement, and the winner. Here is the Preakness, later today, exclusive at the Star's address.
Romance, Untuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from May 28, 1955. Bringing the curtain down on this hour of Romance, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.